Jesus the good teacher, Jesus the therapist, Jesus the giver of bling. The Issues Etc. book of the month for June is Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? 12 False Christs. It's written by regular guest Dr. Matt Richard. Read an excerpt at issuesetc.org or purchase Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? By calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. book of the month, Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? When I mention Puerto Rico, you don't usually think about Lutheranism, do you? You think about sitting on the beach. You think about the sunset over the ocean. You think about a tropical paradise, a Caribbean place where people go to vacation and have a good time and get away from it all. And in some cases, misbehave, knowing that they're on vacation. It all stays there, supposedly. You don't think about the need for missions and Lutheran missions there in Puerto Rico, but there is a great need. What are the challenges facing Lutheran congregations in Puerto Rico, and what does the religious landscape there actually look like? Joining us to talk about Lutheranism in Puerto Rico on this Monday afternoon, June the 19th, Pastor Matt and Heather Roush. They are career missionaries of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in Puerto Rico. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, hey. Todd.
Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Great to be here.
Pastor, what brings you guys back to the States?
Well, every LCMS missionary every 2 years does a reconnect with their support base. So we've been here since the middle of May, and we'll be here until early August, reconnecting with our supporting congregations, individuals who support our ministry in Puerto Rico and allow us to be there.
So you're going to be traveling around the country, I take it.
Absolutely. We already have been.
Already in the midst of it. You bet.
What is the biggest thing you think that pastors and congregations don't understand about missionary work and about Lutheranism in Puerto Rico?
Well, the thing with Lutheranism in Puerto Rico is it's almost non-existent. Unlike other countries where there have been mission efforts going back into the 1800s, I mean, here in the U.S., we had Lutherans here as early as the 1700s. Lutheranism has really only been in Puerto Rico since the beginning of the 20th century, and the LCMS was really laid onto the scene in about the 1990s. They began mission work. Because it was a Spanish colony, there was really only Roman Catholicism up until the U.S. took possession of the island in 1898. Then in the turn of the 20th century, they allowed different Protestant missionaries to come in. There are a handful of ELCA congregations around San Juan, the capital, but for us in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, as far as confessional Lutheranism goes, we've really only been on the island for about 20, 25 years now.
And is it like you're it?
Kind of, yes. We have two missionary pastors on the islands working on behalf of LCMS International Mission and one existing congregation. So I serve as the pastor of a church in Mayagüez, Puerto Rico, on the western coast of the island. Then we have another pastor in the second biggest city, Ponce, where he's in the early stages of planting another congregation down there.
What did you guys have to do to prepare for this? I think you have Wisconsin plates on the car. So neither of you are like native Puerto Rican. So what did you guys have to do, Heather?
We had to go on the road, first of all, and start support building, raising funds, raising support, prayer support, especially for our mission work down in Puerto Rico. And that, you know, really took precedence as we began looking into the actual move down to Puerto Rico. Of course, right away, we also had to start learning Spanish because Spanish is the language of the country there. So although a lot of people are bilingual, Spanish is the main language. And so our entire family, us and our three children, also had to start learning Spanish. And really, we began to learn as much as we could about the island, about the people and the culture there. So
how did the language work out for you? I mean, pastors are trained in the study of languages, but it's for reading, and it's not, I don't speak Greek, I can read it. I don't speak Hebrew, but I can read it. What was it like actually learning a language that you were going to have to speak to native speakers and preach in and things like that?
It was incredibly frustrating because if there's one thing a Lutheran pastor kind of what he's all about is being able to speak about Christ, confess Christ to other people. And all of a sudden, you don't even have the language to do that. So my goal all along was, I mean, as a Lutheran pastor, I'm reasonably confident that if someone asks me, you know, why do you believe infants should be baptized? What's your basis for that belief? Well, I can quote scripture. I can quote the Small Catechism. I can defend that belief. Now to do it in a whole nother language, it's sort of like not even going to ground zero. It's like behind that. So that's been the biggest challenge. I'm kind of at a place now where I feel reasonably confident, but there's still a long way to go.
Oh, he's very humble. He's preaching and teaching in Spanish every Sunday and throughout the week. He does house visits in Spanish. He's doing an excellent job.
I guess my biggest fear there would be sounding dumb to a native speaker, because we tend to assume that people who don't speak English well are not intelligent, but they're obviously very intelligent. They're just not as adept.
It's very humbling. It really is. You have to kind of get over yourself. Truly, because if you're constantly thinking about how you sound, if you know how uneducated you are, you'll never say a word. You know, what we have found is that as you, the more you speak it, the more confidence you build, and people reciprocate it very well then too, and they help you, and you learn more when you speak it. So, yeah, I would say you kind of have to humble yourself tremendously.
You just have to not be afraid to make
just
a mistake.
Just not be afraid to make
a mistake. Just realize you're going to make mistakes. Yeah. People will correct you. Sometimes you'll say something really ridiculous.
That's happened a lot.
Yeah.
That's
when my mother-in-law was down to visit us, we've had a lot of family come to visit us. My mother-in-law was there. She's preparing to leave. I told the congregation that mi sueña was preparing to leave. It's actually suegra, mother-in-law. Sueña is my dream. So I called her my dream.
Simple mistake. You gave us a little bit, Pastor, but if you would, kind of a brief history of Lutheranism on the island.
Sure. Lutheranism is really new to the game, and that's perhaps one of the biggest missional challenges, is at least here in the States, even if a person is not Lutheran, they have a little bit of context with that. They can say, maybe they say, oh, Lutherans, they like potluck and Jell-O and coffee or something like that. There's none of that there. I mean, the term Lutheran is almost completely foreign to people. And so you have to really set a context for where the Lutheran Church has come from, especially I think its context of coming out of the Lutheran Reformation, its relationship to the Catholic Church, and showing exactly where Lutheranism stands on the sort of denominational spectrum. The term Protestant, I know that's really an improper word for us to use as Lutherans, because maybe while we were the original Protestants that came out of the Lutheran Reformation, we're not like the Protestants today. We're liturgical. We're sacramental. We have a sense of our history and ritual. We're different than the Protestant churches, generally speaking, today. But we're not like the Catholic Church either. We occupy a unique place. And I think showing people where that place lies on the religious spectrum is really important to do.
What's the religious landscape of Puerto Rico it's a protectorate of the United States. It's not a nation, so to speak. But what's its religious landscape look like apart from Christianity?
Really, there's just a large number of unchurched people. And then also there is, in certain parts of the island, a real blending of Christian ritual and practices with pagan religions. Santeria is one that is found, especially in the rural areas of the island. There are nominally Christian churches where they conduct animal sacrifice rituals and other pagan rituals that have been handed down sort of from the earliest days of the people on the island, the native Tainos, and other things that have developed over the last 400 or 500 years. So there's a real sense, especially in Latin America, and it's true as well in Puerto Rico, a love of taking the ancient religions of the ancestors and trying to combine it with Christianity. I think if you were to talk to missionaries in Africa, you probably find a lot of that same thing happening there too. It's really hard to let go of those things that are a part of your history.
That sounds kind of spooky. I mean, it's got to, animal sacrifice is something you really have to look hard in the States to find animal sacrifice.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And this isn't right in the middle of the city. This is more in kind of the rural, the back roads areas of Puerto Rico. It's not kind of out in the forefront in the middle of the cities where we are. But we have members of our congregation who have family members who have been engaged in this sort of thing. And we were warned before we went into the mission field to be aware that that Satan is alive and well and at work in the mission field, that you will encounter things that you would never imagine you would encounter. While we haven't come face to face with Santeria or other religious practices like that yet, we're definitely aware that, that's a reality.
What is that like dealing with not only as missionaries, but as a family, as parents, Heather?
You know, we actually welcome that. We've never taken the stance of overprotecting our children. We enjoy exposing them to all the things that the world has to offer, good and bad, because I think everything that is around us is a teaching opportunity and is another opportunity for us to invite our children into the real world that we live in. And I think it's important for them to see that these things exist and then for us to be able to instruct them on God's word and how God says that we should handle them. You know, whether it's, you know, Santeria or false practices religiously in Puerto Rico, or whether it's, you know, cultural things that are happening here in the States. We've always felt like there's tremendous value in instructing our kids and bringing them into the light on everything that's happening around us. I think it can only benefit them as they grow up and hopefully grow into, you know, strong, well-balanced Christians, Lutherans, so that they can then continue the cycle.
I think there was a real sense that if we wanted to just protect our kids and shelter them from everything the world could throw at them, we'd have never gone into the
mission
field.
There's no way we'd be in Puerto Rico right now.
We would lock them away. And you go into the mission field eyes wide open, mm-hmm. realizing that you're going to be encountering things mm-hmm. that are scary, that are challenging, that will put your faith to the test, but that we can also trust that through the power of the Holy Spirit, through the word and the sacrament, we will be kept strong in the faith given to us in baptism, and our family will be fine. And so far, we've been able to trust in that.
I think there's also something really cool about the fact that as the kids are, when we came into this, when we agreed to do this, we agreed to do it as a family. We've continued to see even from the time the children were born how God uses them in their lives. And this has been not just a mission assignment for Matt or a mission call for Matt or for myself. This has been a mission call for our family. And for me personally, it's been an encouragement to see how our kids, you know, how they think things through, how they process it through, how they handle situations that come at them. And a lot of the time, it's instruction for me. So, you know, I have to give kudos to my kids as well because, you know, God is definitely using them. And that's not to say that you have to be in the mission field or you're overprotecting your kids. No, I think it's just the mentality of the stance that we've taken as Christian parents is, you know, here, we're in this together. Let us all deal with it together. Let's help one another and learn from each other. We have things that we can offer you. And in return, they offer quite a bit to us, too.
We hear zero of the politics or the kind of the state of the state of places like Puerto Rico, even though they are so very close to us geographically. But we just lately heard that some referendum was approving from the Puerto Rican side statehood for the 1 millionth time, something like that. Would you describe the political situation in Puerto Rico as stable?
I think there's a lot of frustration. I think that's the word that just summarizes the political attitude is the people are incredibly frustrated. And I know that's an easy term to throw out because I think a lot of people in the United States feel the same way. The difference in Puerto Rico is people really don't have a whole lot of power. They have no vote in U.S. presidential elections. They can have a referendum and choose statehood, but that doesn't change the reality that U.S. Congress needs to approve that. So currently, Puerto Rico is, I would say, sort of teetering on the brink of maybe a little more political unrest. There's $74 billion of public debt. They're unable to pay it. They had their finances taken over by a presidential-appointed committee last summer. Actually, it was President Obama who appointed the first committee, and now President Trump has oversight of that committee. The island's finances are under the control of this appointed board, so they're not even able to elect the people who will renegotiate their debt. This all leaves people feeling incredibly frustrated, incredibly hopeless, and I think it really creates a context where we as the church have a ability to come in and talk about where our true hope and confidence lies. It's not in the political leaders. It's not in our status as state or commonwealth or territory. Our true confidence is in the one who gave himself for us and promises us the gift of eternal life, Jesus Christ our Lord.
Is there hostility toward Americans? Is that an obstacle to mission work there, Heather?
I wouldn't say it's an obstacle, but it can be a little bit of an Yeah, there can be a little bit of animosity, I think, towards white people from the United States. And I think the reason is there's some history behind that, you know, as well as there just being it's a tourist country. And a lot of people come there with the mentality, you know, what happens in Puerto Rico stays in Puerto Rico. And unfortunately, that gives a lot of us a bad name. And
they behave badly.
They do. They behave badly. A lot of people that come there behave badly. And that's just the truth. So if you're there and you're expecting to be taken seriously, you know, you kind of have to prove that up front. And one of the ways that you can do that is by speaking Spanish instead of English at first and not expecting them to come to you. And also maybe just doing a little bit of research, you know, about the culture, about what it takes, you know, to become a part of the culture. Relationships are really important in Puerto Rico and in all of Latin American countries. So for you to take a minute and ask somebody how they're doing, how is your day? How is your family? You know, is there anything I can pray with you about, you know, before you get to the business or whatever it is that you're actually in the room for? That goes a long way. It really does.
Heather Roush and Pastor Matt Roush are our guests. We're talking about Lutheranism in Puerto Rico. They're career missionaries in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in Puerto Rico. We'll be right back.
We Lutherans, we're never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship. lcms.org/stewardship.
Casting Christ's net on the internet. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Monday afternoon, we are talking about Lutheranism in Puerto Rico with Pastor Matt and Heather Roush, career missionaries of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in Puerto Rico. So what would you say is the biggest challenge that missions face is there in Puerto Rico? What is it?
I think the biggest challenge in Puerto Rico for Lutheranism and our work as a Lutheran church is I've found in my experience there, surprisingly, that Puerto Ricans, and this may be true with a lot of other Latin American mission fields, they have a great love of legalism. They come out of the Catholic Church disenfranchised by the legalism of Roman Catholicism, and they turn en masse to the Mormon Church, the Jehovah's Witnesses. On our side of the island, the biggest church outside of the Catholic Church is the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Oh. And you have these people who live by these dictates. They obviously can only worship on Saturday. They may not eat meat. They may not have chocolate. They can't drink coffee. And it's like, why go on?
So, agreed.
But people there just are drawn to these rules. And so, again, when I talked about us kind of setting our where contextually we are as the Lutheran Church, it's to talk about the freedom of the gospel, that Jesus has fulfilled the law on our behalf, not so we can do whatever we want, but so that we're freed to love God and love our neighbor as ourselves, and that he has done the total work, and I don't have to put my trust in what I ate this day, what day I go to worship. All of that has been fulfilled by my Lord, and we just have an incredible need to fill that void in Puerto Rico.
I don't think people would expect that of kind of the inclination of people toward legalism in a place like Puerto Rico. Before we came on the air, I heard you, Heather, talking about island time, and usually the picture that we have of Puerto Rico is kind of a fun-loving place to go where, you know, it's 5 o'clock someplace, and which means it's 5 o'clock all the time. That may just be an American misperception there. I would not expect that kind of inclination toward legalism.
You know, it was a surprise to us as well. I would have thought that there would have been a stronger non-denominational presence there, coming from a non-denominational background, because of that, kind of the release of the rules, letting it all go, allowing your feelings, you know, to come forth. But actually, one of the things that, as we've lived there, it has caused me to reflect a little bit on my non-denominational background. And I think what it's actually done is shown me that although presented outwardly different in a different way than a more liturgical faith, it's more of a legalistic religion or denomination. And so, you know, I think I was surprised by that at first as well. But I think outwardly they're very expressive, but inwardly they are really, really drawn to the stability of the legalism within their faith.
Because it puts it in their control.
Yeah.
It says, I can point to the things that I did. See, I'm all good. I've done X, Y, and Z. I've eaten what I'm supposed to eat and not eaten what I'm not supposed to eat. I've followed the rules. I've done these things. It's all good.
And I think in a culture that, you know, that has growing animosity and growing frustration because they don't feel like they're in control of their lives and their climate and their country, I think that is something that they do hold on to. So,
Heather had mentioned the liturgy, and I'm wondering about the liturgy. People kind of typically think of the mission field in general as a place where you go and, you know, you go native, the pastor wears whatever everybody else is wearing, and then you go native in worship too. Is
sure.
that the case with Lutheranism?
No, not at all. I mean, there are a couple things that are a little different. I mean, our music is led by guitar and box drum because we don't have an organ in our church. And even just, I mean, I grew up LCMS. I love the organ. In fact, I miss the organ, not being home and worshiping with it every Sunday. But I think if you were to visit our church, you would know exactly what we were doing, even if you don't speak Spanish, because we begin our service with the invocation. We confess our sins. We sing the Gloria Patri. We sing the Kyrie, the Gloria in Excelsis, and it's all in Spanish. But I mean, if you know that rhythm of worship that you're accustomed to in English out of LSB, then you would know exactly what we're doing. And I repeatedly tell the congregation, and they've received this so well and find such joy in it, that it's this liturgy that unites us to the church on any given Sunday. Whether it's the church worshiping here in the States or around the world, we're gathered, joining our voices to the same song, to the same the church that's been using this worship for ages. We add our voices to that, and it unites us as a church around the world and throughout time.
Does church start on time?
Oh, I wish it did.
That's such a good question. That's such a loaded question. It's great.
So after we got there, okay, the first time we visited Puerto Rico, the service starts, and I'm doing air quotes right now, at 11 a.m., which is already super late. But the first time we visited there, it didn't start until 12:15 in the afternoon. And that was because they hadn't printed the bulletins yet, and they ran out of ink on the printer, and the person who was helping with the service wasn't there yet, and so all these things delayed it. And after we took the call and I began leading the worship myself, one of the members who had lived in the States for 30 years says to me, "Pastor, we got to start the service right at 11 o'clock. We can't be starting late." And I said to him, "Listen, I'm the outsider here. I'm not going to be the American who comes in and makes you act all American." But I was speaking with one of my Spanish tutors who's from Peru, and he told me, you know, Latinos know how to be on time. They know how to be on time for doctor's appointments, for work, for school. So when you don't treat the service the same way, it's you're saying that it has less of a significance because it's not worth starting on time. He said, don't mistake what some might call a habit among Latinos for just sloppiness. And so since then, we've been a little more prompt about starting it right at 11.
Yeah, I don't know. We start more like 11:15 sometimes, but we're closer to 11.
We're working on it.
Does that kind of an adjustment, because we live in a very clock-based culture in the United States, which as Heather had pointed out off mic, most of the rest of the world doesn't pay that close attention to the clock. Is that kind of adjustment difficult for you as a family as well?
Well, it wasn't hard for me because we've always joked about the late Heather Roush, you know. So that was actually easier for me to climb into that climate. But I think for the family, absolutely. And I think in general, not day-to-day stuff, but in general, you do feel that, you know, there is a sense of you crave order. You crave order amongst you because it's what you've always known. And, you know, coming back to the States, we always joke about that first and foremost. Like, it just, you're surrounded by procedures, timeliness. And that is something that I think North Americans, you know, it's part of who we are. It's part of our makeup. So yeah, that was a little bit of an adjustment. And I think day to day, you don't see it as often as you do when you reflect upon it. You just kind of feel an unrest and you can identify that it's one of the things that you're struggling with.
You had said, you used the term, Matt, outsider. And I wonder if that really ever goes away, generally speaking, for kind of mission work, but specifically for your circumstance in Puerto Rico.
No, we're really mindful we'll always be outsiders, that no matter how well we learn the language, no matter how much we adopt the customs, eat the food, live like Puerto Ricans, I'm always going to be a big white gringo from Wisconsin. I'm never going to be a Puerto Rican. So actually, that's why part of our mission work, one of our goals as a synod is to identify individuals who can serve as pastors there. So we've already got a couple people we have our eye on. We have a partnership with Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne through their SMP program to train Spanish-speaking pastors. They've added a Spanish program alongside their regular SMP program in a context where really, truly, there is special circumstances. This church we currently serve for 7 years had no pastor. They went 7 years. They had lay people doing preaching, lay people leading the service, didn't have them presiding over the sacrament. But to the congregation's credit, they always recognized we need a pastor, that this is a odd situation. We need to get out of it. And so they continued to seek that out and form that relationship with the Office of International Mission to have a pastor sent down there. We want to continue that where we can train their own pastors as well.
How important is that? Because I know that that has been one of the ways that mission work, at least in the Missouri Synod's context, has been reoriented. Mm-hmm. To the goal are altars and pulpits and fonts with pastors who speak the language, pastors who are indigenous to that culture and to that place. How important is that?
Absolutely. The fundamental work we do is starting Lutheran congregations, gatherings of people around word and sacrament with Lutheran pastors delivering those gifts faithfully. And ideally, we want Puerto Rican pastors serving Puerto Rican congregations, or at the very least, Hispanic pastors, Native Latin American pastors serving these Latin American congregations. And there's incredible work going on all throughout Latin America with our various missionaries, the new seminary we've begun in the Dominican Republic that's beginning classes this fall, training local indigenous pastors to serve the people, because they will always fit into the culture better than I'll ever be able to.
I wonder, when people picture mission work in Puerto Rico, what I picture is palm trees, white beaches. I've been to Puerto Rico. It's lovely. It's a lovely, lovely country. How do you overcome that in terms of how people back here perceive what you guys are doing, not necessarily drinking out of coconuts every night?
That's funny you should mention, because that's a real challenge for us, even compared to our neighboring island, our neighboring country, the Dominican Republic. One of the things we want to do is bring partners who support our mission work down to Puerto Rico to see the work we're doing down there, to be a part of the decision making. We have LCMS districts involved, congregations, LWML groups, all different entities who are coming along together with us to carry out the work here. One of the challenges is getting to actually take the time to come down there and see the work, because they have a hard time justifying to people taking trips down to
Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm. Even though in the Dominican Republic, they don't seem to have that problem where the partners routinely come down there. We both have white sandy beaches. We both have tropical drinks. We both have the touristy side of things. But in Puerto Rico, that's sort of the image that people have. We just remind ourselves, people in Puerto Rico don't live that way. It's the tourists who come down there to live that way. The people there are the ones who are struggling with 15% unemployment, the ones paying 11.5% sales tax, the ones depending on government-funded housing to live in, and then those places don't have basic amenities, the ones having to pay through their nose for electricity and water because they're jacking up the utility rates because all the debt is held in bonds against the utility companies. Mm-hmm. So the average Puerto Rican is really struggling, and it's a far cry from the image of the tourist life that some of us might picture.
Well, and I think there's also something else included in that. You know, the grass is always greener on the other side. You know, the local Puerto Ricans don't see the beaches as anything, you know, other than just home. You know, that's the beach. It's very rare that you'd actually see a lot of local people go to the beach because they've grown up around the beach. It's no big deal. A lot of them come to the north or go to Europe, you know, where there's mountains and you know, greenery and trees and, you know, rivers and whatever.
Snow.
Yeah, and snow. Mm-hmm. We're from northern Wisconsin, you know, or the Midwest. You know, a lot of the tropics are always beautiful and always appealing. We love to go there, but it's easy. It's just part of the way that you live when you're living on an island. So I think the grass is kind of always greener, and once you get past the fact that there are beautiful beaches in Puerto Rico, then you see that there's also a tremendous climate of poverty there. There's a lot of unrest, and there's a lot of wonderful work to do for the church. So
before we let you guys go, you are working on a book project. Heather, tell us about it.
I am. I would love to share a lot with you. Not quite ready to at the place yet where we can share a lot about it, but I'm really excited to be working on a project with Concordia Publishing House. We were just over there today and met with the team of people that are going to be working alongside me in that book. And I think, you know, ultimately, what it comes down to is this has been, you know, 9 years in the working. I'm really excited for the opportunity to speak on life issues and sexual integrity. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times over the last 9 years that I've been witness to a group of parents or leaders who have said, you know, it is unrealistic in today's culture for us to expect our teenagers to abstain from having sex. And casual sex has just become part of the culture. And we've kind of said, okay, we're okay with that. I've always said there's no such thing as safe sex outside of the context of marriage. So that's the lead of the book. That's kind of the context that we're shooting for. I'm really excited about it and appreciate your prayers. And we'll keep you guys in the loop as things develop.
Pastor Matt and Heather Roush are career missionaries of the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod in Puerto Rico. You can find out more about their mission work at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you for having us. It's great to be here with you guys again.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll get a Washington update from Tim Gagline, and we'll begin a series with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller on Martin Luther's prayers. We'll discuss blessings before and after meals. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I've got some friends down in Houston.
Join Mark and Molly Hemingway, Brian Wolfmiller, Rod Dreher, Jennifer Roback Morse, Scott Murray, and me for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
And they won't ask me questions.